Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
That's right. We are who you thought we were. If you thought that we are the Next Fan Up podcast. We are the podcast by the fans, for the fans, and really for you. Even if you're not a fan, we're going to make you a fan. I am your Kansas City Chiefs superfan, Nick, and I am joined by four other fans here. And it's going to be a great episode. We're actually introducing two new superfans, and we're not done, actually, recruiting new members to our ranks. If you would like to join this podcast after listening to how brilliant and fun-loving guys we are, send us an application. We're still looking for a couple of spots, specifically the Bills, Cardinals, and Lions. And once we fill those, then we will have a well-plugged-in, passionate fan representing every single team in the NFL, which is great. And that's really what makes us unique as a podcast, because we get the fan voice on every team. And we are also about to start our own mock draft. Another cool thing about having a representative of every team is everybody really knows their team well and can make informed decisions. I mean, all of these mocks that you're seeing flooding up the internet right now, they're all written by national commentators that only have sometimes an airplane's view of the teams. But that's why ours is far superior, and you can be a part of it, particularly if you love the Bills, the Cardinals, or the Lions. And again, that email address is nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also find our past pods at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. And you can talk jive with us or see some of our more text work by going to Facebook, typing Next Fan Up into the search bar, or finding us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. But without further ado, you should really listen in to the other voices we have here. We have the ever reasonable and soft-spoken, but nonetheless brilliant Chicago Tom. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm really loud today and excited and pretty ever reasonable.
All right, good. You got to try to be a lot less reasonable. I'm expecting
you to do that.
Don't disappoint me.
Very little.
Also, if you loved that horrible Mel Gibson accent in Braveheart, then you're going to love Neil, our Washington superfan, even more. Give us some of that buttery accent there, Neil.
Hootsman for Mahid, as we say here in Scotland. I would say, Nick, that we are approaching the mock draft. It's great. I'm just exercising my quick twitch fingers. And I'm telling you, my catching radius for watching prospects has never been wider.
We also have the first of the two new superfans I'm going to introduce to you guys, and that is our new Saints superfan, Chris. How's it going, Chris?
It's going great. How are you doing over there in Kansas City?
Doing good. I'm actually in New York as well, like many of the superfans. We're all pretty much exiles, it seems like. But we're going to hear from our new Denver superfan here in a bit. But first, just with you, Chris, what strange circumstances in your life brought you to the Saints?
Well, I just a big fan of getting my heart broken, I think. big fan of punishment, and it worked out for me. I'm kind of military brat, so I've had the pleasure of living everywhere, and that was really the one constant. My mother was a big Saints fan growing up. So we would always, get together, and as a family, we'd watch the Saints if they were ever televised. So that was a big part of my childhood, and growing up with the Dome Patrol didn't hurt either.
Cool stuff, man. Well, so the things we're going to be getting to today, we're going to be running through some of the latest news that's been out there. I mean, there hasn't been a whole lot now that free agency has cooled a bit, but we still have plenty of goings on. And we're going to be talking about a couple of our teams we haven't gotten in entirely in depth with, but mostly we're going to talk with Chris, because Chris is, even though he's our newest member, he's the one who's done probably as much homework as anybody in terms of getting ready for the draft. And he has his own positional draft board, and we're going to be breaking down some of the top prospects and where and how free agency might change where they fall. So listen in for all of that. But first, I wanted to get to some of the some of the things that have just been out there in the last few weeks, guys. And part of that is you know, it's something they've been talking about, I think, since right after the league ended, which is the idea of ejecting players after two personal foul penalties. Apparently, I mean, it's something we brought up on the air when it was still a bit more of a possibility. But now Seattle cornerback Richard Sherman has spoken out about it. And with his characteristic diplomatic form, he said, "I think it's foolish, but it sounds like something that somebody who's never played the game would say, something they would suggest because he," meaning Goodell, "doesn't understand. He's just a face. He's just a suit. He's never set foot on the field and understood how you can get a personal foul." He also said about the idea about the whole catch rule that, yeah, like, because you've got a bunch of suits doing it, you've probably got a bunch of guys who've never played, who've never touched a football to hold it out or to shake someone's hand and take a picture, but they've never played the game. So, you know, these are both controversial rules. I'm actually really surprised that the catch rule is not getting another look, it seems like, on this offseason. But the two personal fouls and you get an ejection thing, I mean, I don't know, that's something to me, especially in the age of, you know, we had this week the NFL officially acknowledge the realities of the long-term effects of concussions with CTE and stuff. And also just, I don't know, it seems like there's certain players that are, there's only a handful of players that actually get multiple personal fouls in a game anyway. And I'd be fine seeing those guys ejected. What do you guys think?
Well, I first would want to know exactly what they're going to classify as a personal foul if they move forward with this. Personal fouls are such a broad, there's so many different things you can do to get a personal foul.
I think it'd be unnecessary roughness for
it. Yeah. I've got it right in front of me. The infractions will be limited to throwing a punch, a forearm, kicking, using abusive, threatening, or insulting language, using baiting or taunting acts. So it's not like a typical personal foul. If you get penalized for hitting the quarterback's face mask a couple times, you're not going to get tossed. It's got to be limited to those types of things that I just read off.
Okay, I guess the taunting seems a little overkill. If we get an excessive celebration more than once, that person's out of the game. But besides that, I agree with it. If there's going to be somebody who's continuously targeting, then he shouldn't be on the field.
So this is in essence the Odell Beckham rule. Is that what
pretty much?
I'm absolutely in favor of it, and I think that the taunting part of it, that's really great. We have just to go slightly off the topic a little bit. We have two sports here that are massive in the United Kingdom, and that's rugby and soccer. Well, we call it football, but I'll just say soccer. In soccer, we get taunting all the time. It's totally out of control. People screaming in the referees, umpires' faces, completely inappropriate. In rugby, they call the referee sir, and there's none of it. And I think the NFL has to be very careful, because what they're doing is every Sunday, you've got millions of kids watching the game, and kids will be taking what they see their great heroes doing on the field, you know, running into somebody's face and taunting them, and they'll be taking that to their classroom and their playing fields at school the following week. So I think it's great. It's just another tightening of the screw, trying to keep players safe and make them appear to be better people, at least. So I think it's a good rule. I'm really happy with it. Although one has to acknowledge that Richard Sherman, of course, is the voice of reason. So maybe he is actually right.
That leads me to my... I think Richard Sherman, he's got a blockage in his alimentary canal somewhere, because every time he opens his mouth, a bunch of feces falls out onto the sidewalk. And kind of, that's poo for those of you who don't know the definition. I think I can say that on a podcast.
Certainly can.
What really bugs me is the media eats it up every time he does it. And I'm convinced that when he retires, he'll end up being a commentator on ESPN or the NFL Network. And at that point, he'll make about as much sense then as Michael Irvin does now, as far as I'm concerned. And in this particular case, I think he's wrong. I think this rule is a good thing. I think the Odell Beckham thing brought it on, but you know, I think as Neil said, there are a lot of sports around the world that are a lot more strict than that, and with a lot of justification. And you know, I don't mind seeing the game played with emotion, but I think that the things that they're limiting here are really pretty unnecessary. And I don't have a single problem with it. The other rule was the catch rule. This is a difficult thing. I think the problem, I've thought about this a lot, and the one thing that bugs me about this is the NFL has come out and said that what they think they need to do is educate the fans and the broadcasters. That is not true. All of us have eyes, and we all see what happens on the field, and we all know that something's messed up. And you can't snow me by telling me that the broadcasters or I as a fan don't know what I'm talking about or don't see what I see. I've got eyes. I know what happens. And I know that, for instance, you know, when Dez Bryant makes a catch and they reverse it, and then the very next season Larry Fitzgerald makes the same catch and it's a legal catch, something's wrong, because as far as I was concerned, they were identical, and the rule was called differently both times. I think, in fairness to the NFL, despite what they say, I think they know that what they need to do is make sure that they get consistency on the way that the referee calls the rule. And if they do that, then they don't need to rewrite it. And I think they're taking steps toward doing that. I think Dean Blandino getting on the phone in New York with the referees during the playoffs last year was the first step toward that, toward making sure that the calls, those calls in particular, were going to be consistent on the field. And I think if they work on it and get the referees together and make sure that they're all seeing the same thing and they're all keep calling it the same way, that we won't have as much of a problem as we have over the last few years with this rule. I don't necessarily think the rule needs to be changed. I think the referees just have to interpret it consistently, and as long as they do that, it'll be fine.
Well, and just one more item before we get into some of the more personnel news is that, you know, also in terms of figuring out the rules on the field, another thing that came out is, and this is something I actually didn't realize, is that apparently there are no standards currently for how sticky gloves can be in the NFL. And that's something that they're going to take a look at. It's something that NFL's executive VP of football operations, Troy Vincent, said during a conference call this week, which is that he said, quote, "The challenge is the tackiness, and the gloves now are so tacky that it's taking away from the true skill level. So we have been working with our manufacturers and partners, Virginia Tech, apparently, in trying to create a standard that in all protective equipment, in particular, the gloves." So frankly, it is a work in progress because there is no standards in the industry, and it appears that we have to create one. Now, this is something I've also noticed. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys have ever actually picked up the official gear gloves that they use on the field, but they are really sticky, like to the point where it's made out of, like, I think it's some of that kind of like sticky rubber material that, I mean, basically if you were to throw them against the wall, they would stick practically. And, you know, just on the subject of the catch, you know, and what is a catch, and it, what do you guys think about the issue of the gloves and making them a bit slicker or at least making, you know, reducing their stickiness a bit?
I'm assuming that the changes in the gloves, that all happened when Stick'Em was banned, and there was probably standards set for the substances you could actually put on your hands.
Right, you can't add anything extra, you know, I guess.
Yeah, and then the gloves really started to take off. I think probably simply just a loophole in the NFL rulebook, and they're going to address it. Be quite interested to see how far they get with Under Armour and Nike, to see what sort of industry standard they can reach. But I think we're seeing, aren't we, a lot of these incredible hand catches these days, and you kind of look at them, you think, well, goodness sake, he's probably got glue on his fingers. It doesn't look real, so they're having to do something about it.
Now, see, I take the opposite approach in it, and frankly, I have a hard time caring. I don't see that as a competitive advantage for offense. The defenders are allowed to wear the same gloves. And it, frankly, it's exciting when the receiver or the corner goes up and makes that one-handed catch. But Beckham was just, you know, he was an exciting rookie until he started making those catches. And then all of a sudden, he's everywhere. He's one of the top wide receivers of all time, if you ask ESPN. So, you know, it's something that it feels like that. It feels like a retired defender's complaint in a "it was tougher in my day" kind of stance, if you ask me. But it's, we have so many issues, like the one we just talked about. We don't even know what a catch is, but we're worried about how flashy of a catch it is when they make it. Nick, we have so many other things we need to focus on.
Nick, no. Are you able to tell us what Richard Sherman's view is on this?
I do not have that. I'm not sure he was asked. He does wear gloves. So maybe he thinks that only people that wear gloves are people that have been on the field or something of that extent.
Give it time. He'll tell you his opinion, even if you don't ask for it.
Right. I think that's probably true. One thing I do want to get your guys' opinion on is, you know, there hasn't been, you know, any concrete signings among these last few quarterbacks that are out there or seemingly available through trades. But RG3 has now met with both the Jets and the Browns. The Browns said they were just doing their homework on him, and it doesn't seem like the Jets are going to be jumping to sign him either. It kind of gets the feeling like now everybody is just, like, sitting on whatever cards they have and waiting to see how the draft falls, or at least the first round before any of these last guys get signed. But it's, to me, it is still weird because, you know, teams like the Broncos or the Jets that don't have anybody, but are teams that, you know, could certainly get back to, you know, could go to the playoffs next year. They have a lot of other things going for them. I don't understand why they're taking the risk of not, you know, slightly overpaying somebody and letting these guys hang out there rather than take, you know, their destiny into their own hands. I hear Neil making some noises. What are your thoughts on this, Neil?
I just think you've hit the nail on the head for the next kind of couple of weeks. This is the biggest question, really, isn't it? Going into the sort of the final weeks of the draft preparation, what's going to happen? excuse me, what's going to happen to RG3 cap and fits? I'd also throw in there the Rams as well into this whole Cleveland, Jets, Denver sort of triumvirate. I'd throw the Rams. I'd probably throw in San Francisco too. I would not be surprised that on the night of the first round of the draft, maybe the night before, the night of the draft, and then before the second round starts, that all these three guys will be signed up by somebody. Yeah, they're all kind of, we're just waiting for the first, it's like one of these world championship blinking competitions, you know, staring at each other, and the first one who blinks gets RG3. I don't know how it works, but... interesting. I hope RG3 gets to. I'd rather see him in Denver than Cleveland. I'd like to see the guy get a second chance. I'm not sure what chance he's going to have behind that Cleveland offensive line.
The people that should be paying attention to, I think, most of this is the Carson Wentzes and the Jared Goffs of the world, because if Cleveland goes with RG3, their lives will be so much better. I would. If I was Carson Wentz, I'd be sweating it. I'd be crossing my fingers that I would slip past Cleveland and end up in Dallas.
You know,
yeah, he should, if it's a question of money, he should just be like offering RG3, like, guess what, man? Like, if they don't, like, I'll pay the difference. Like, whatever you want and whatever they don't pay you, it's coming out of my pocket, buddy.
You know, AJ, our Jets fan, has insisted for weeks now that the Jets are playing it just right. They're lowballing Fitz, and they're gonna get him in. They're just forcing him to accept it, their price. And I got to tell you, if I was him, I think I'd be a little bit more nervous. Right now, I mean, Fitzgerald's got, you know, he's got his flaws. I understand why there might be some skepticism about around the league about last year. You know, he emerged in Buffalo, but he spent a couple of years in Tennessee and with the Texans, and, you know, wasn't any great shakes. And I think the thought might be that the receivers sort of made that offense last year, and it was more them than it was Fitzpatrick. But I got to tell you, if they've got RG3 on that team, or if they're stuck with Geno Smith again, that offense is in for a rough time, and I wouldn't play around with Fitzpatrick. As far as I can tell, he's the only quarterback left out there that you really want quarterback in your team. He's the last really competent one available, as far as I can tell. I wouldn't want Kaepernick, and I wouldn't want RG3, and I wouldn't want Geno Smith, who's with the Jets now. And if I was Fitzpatrick, and it was the night before the draft, and I had two offers on the table. They were both low-ball offers. I'd take Denver. You know, I just figured I'd write the Jets off just out of spite. So I'm not at all sure that they're playing it right, and I think that all these teams should be interested in Fitzpatrick. And then I think Chris has a point. I think they're all going to be looking to draft a quarterback no matter what they do now. The loss of Osweiler in Denver was just humongous. Nobody saw that coming, and I'm sure John Elway didn't see it coming. And now, I don't care what anybody says, they're in a bind because I don't think you want Sanchez quarterback in that team. So I think it's all going to be interesting. I think Neil's exactly right. I think it's probably the issue that everyone will be keeping an eye on for the next, well, it looks like it's going to go on indefinitely, at least for a while.
Well, I appreciate that segue, Tom, because we did have a chance to catch up with our new Denver superfan, Lewis, and get him a bit acquainted with us and our audience, and also to get his thoughts on what the heck Denver is doing. And so we are now joined by our newest, well, actually one of our newest superfans. It is our Denver superfan, Lewis. And you know, it's been an interesting offseason so far. We've been doing a lot of talking about your team, and so I'm really glad we now have an official representative of the fan base to defend himself against all the doubters out there. You know, chief among them me, your Kansas City Chiefs superfan. And so just in general, man, but before we get into what your team's been doing, you know, what unfortunate series of events led to you becoming a Denver Broncos superfan?
It's pretty weird. I live in New York, and I live with a lot of Jets and Giants fans, and I kind of wanted to do my own thing. And I started liking football a little later, so I guess I was a pretty big Jay Cutler fan, unfortunately. And
wow.
I guess I started following the team from there. And once he left, I just stuck with the team.
Your Broncos loyalty was greater than your Jay Cutler loyalty. Well, I think it's gotten you a little bit more success going down that route.
Yes, it has.
All right. Well, you know, like I said, you know, this has been maybe the most intriguing a Super Bowl winning team has been in the offseason. I mean, every team you sort of expect to fall back to earth a little bit, just because, I mean, repeating is you know, almost impossible in this league and in this day and age. And you know, free agents become more expensive, guys leave. But, man, what is going on in Denver? What's your take on all this?
Well, after the Super Bowl, we, you know, teams like to go after the big names, people who produce. And as a fan, it was kind of expected that Malik and Danny would probably go. We offered Malik a competitive offer, but, like, I understood why he would chase the money. Also, Danny. Now, the thing going into it, I thought we would eventually re-sign Brock. But after seeing the money he got and the like report saying that he didn't feel comfortable with the team because of his benching and things like that, I kind of understood why he left. And the truth is, I'm not as upset as other fans might be. I'm kind of more upset of how the team handled the C.J. Anderson situation. They tried to be a little cheap in not offering him a higher tender offer, and he got a big deal. He got a $18 million contract with Miami, and I get it. I think he's a good running back, and he could run, he could pass protect, he could catch, but he never did it in the full season. So I was kind of hoping we'd go for someone a little cheaper. But, yeah, the offseason has been up and down. I like what they did with the Okung signing. He's a promising left tackle, Pro Bowler type player. And the way the deal was structured, I kind of liked it. And I hope Donald Stevenson's a good signing. They said he's a very athletic player. So that's good for our running scheme. And the offseason's not over yet. Last year, we were able to sign Evan Mathis late. We still have the draft. So right now, it's a little bumpy, but we'll see as time goes on. And hopefully more things fall into place.
Well, I can tell you, Stevenson, I mean, he's a bit more of a swing tackle. I mean, he had his moments where he was looking like one of the more competent linemen on the Chiefs' O-line, but that's only because all the rest of the guys were so bad. But, you know, I mean, I think he's young, he can be coached up probably.
I like that smart, he could play multiple positions. He could play right guard or right tackle for us, because right now I think we have solid linemen. We could play Okung on the left tackle. I think Max Garcia at left guard. Paradis played pretty well at center. And then if you could add a combination of Stevenson and hopefully Ty Sombrello, and maybe they could make something work over there.
Well, I mean, you can have all the best blocking in the world, and it's still only going to get you so far, as the Cowboys learned last year, if you don't have a competent quarterback back there. And you do have the Sanchez, but who do you actually want to see taking snaps in a Denver uniform next year? I mean, who do you think actually ends up there?
Well, realistically, if it was up to me, I think the best option available is Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I'm not sure if the team's going to go that route. Our options from my perspective are really Kaepernick, Fitzpatrick, someone in the draft. My wild card that I would like the team to pursue, but I don't know if it would go down, is Mike Glennon. I think he had a couple of good moments in Tampa Bay. I don't know why they didn't give him more of a chance, but I don't know what the team wants to do with Glennon. But I think Kaepernick isn't as bad as everyone says he is, especially if he came into Denver, he would have to do much less. You saw what he did with a very talented team in San Francisco. So if they could get him for a fourth and restructure his deal, I would be okay with that.
This is Chicago Tom. You know, if you want Jay Cutler back, it's okay with me. Just so you know.
No, I think that's fine. We've been down that route and can't make that that work. But he did play pretty decently last year.
Yeah, he did okay. They didn't ask him to do very much, and I think he responded to the coaching staff. But nevertheless, you know, if you want to take him and have him quit on you again, you know, you're welcome to have him.
No, I can't go through that again.
I don't blame you. Not too thrilled with it myself. I do have a question. Russell Okung represented himself in those negotiations. And from what I read, he really took advantage of. As far as I can tell, if they drop him before training camp, they don't owe him anything. I don't know. Are there any quotes from him out there? Do you think there's any reason to believe that he's upset with the way that went down? Does he think that they took advantage of him, or, you know, does he just?
Well, from what I read, I think he was pretty happy with how the deal went. I'm not sure how the negotiations went with the other teams, but he has a talent, and if he's betting on himself, he's getting good money if it works out. So I know if they cut him before week one, he's not owed, I don't think, anything. But I think if he plays week one, he gets a $5 million bonus, or the $5 million guaranteed. And then it's 4 years of team options. But I think he liked the deal. I think he liked the way it went down, from what I read.
Well, I think it's certainly a good deal for you guys, but, you know, just sort of a corollary of that. I mean, I think that was a smartly sort of hedging your bet sort of deal. You might get yourself a franchise left tackle. You might get a guy who, you know, is dependable, and you can go either way with this contract. But I'm curious what your thoughts are in terms of the general frugality of the Broncos front office so far this offseason. I mean, they've been saying that, you know, they want to keep guys that want to be in Denver. But basically, they got outbid on everybody who left. And so at some point, I mean, especially when it comes to the quarterback position, to me, I mean, that's something where it's definitely going to be worth it to you to overpay by a few million a year to have someone who's competent. What do you think? I mean, do you think that they were sort of naive going into this offseason, or do you think they're being smart and saving what money they have?
I don't know if it's naive. I think it's more disciplined. What people forget is, we re-signed Derek Wolfe right before the season ended, so people don't really put that into account. And also with Bronson, he played 7 games. We couldn't really tell what he was because he was sort of coddled. You're paying him $18 million off potential, which is fair. I understand. Listen, I think he could be a good quarterback, but I guess they're disciplined in the way they spend money, and maybe they have someone that they like in the draft, or maybe they think something could work out with Kaepernick. I understand it's the most prominent position, and you should overpay. I don't think Brock would have signed with the team if they offered the same offer as Houston did. I think he was really hurt by getting benched, and I think he really wanted to leave. So in that sense, I don't know if we could have re-signed him. And Malik and Danny were just – it was just too much money for us to pay that. We couldn't do anything about. But I think Brock would have left anyway if the offer was the same exact offer Houston was offering.
I was just wondering what's going to be happening to Ryan Clady now that Okung signed. And if I could just say one thing about Okung, when these deals go down where there's no agent involved, you do wonder – that perhaps the other agents are putting out noises there saying you cannot do without an agent, so we're going to trash this deal.
So what I read about Clady is I read a report that there's around 4 to 5 teams that are interested in him, but I think the teams that are interested in him would want him to restructure his deal. He has a 2-year deal with around $19 million left. So I don't know if they're – because if he didn't want to restructure with Denver, I don't see why he'd want to restructure with another team. So I think ultimately they're going to end up cutting him, which saves around $9 million off the cap. And I think there's a $2 million dead charge cap. So in essence, we're basically swapping Okung and Clady, and we're kind of saving money for this year, not down the line. But so I think it works out in our favor. Especially if we get a draft pick out of him.
I think our division is really, really tight at the top. You at some point, you're going to encounter our stark raving mad Raiders superfan who is pretty happy with himself right now and the moves that his team has made. I'm definitely confident in the Chiefs right now. And Ken, I mean, look, counter Charger super fan. He's getting a lot of injured guys back. I think it's going to be a fun division, and I look forward to having some battles with you as the season goes on.
Yeah, definitely. I think the AFC West is one of the better divisions this year. I think Oakland made a lot of upgrades, and Kansas City played well last year. They kept most of their guys. Who'd they lose this year in free agency? I know they lost Sean Smith. Did they lose?
That's pretty much it. He was the only starter we lost so far. We have some guys that are still hanging out there unsigned, and so we may pull them back for cheap deals, or they may be picked up by other people. But basically, everybody else who's out there was a rotational guy or a backup. Sean Smith was the only starter. So,
yeah. So I think the AFC West is going to be one of the better divisions, and it's going to be a tight race, and hopefully Denver's defense will still prevail, even losing Malik and Danny, and it will be a lot of fun.
You still picking your own team to win the division in terms of where things sit right now?
Yeah, I think our defense is not going to fall off as much as people think. I think Shane Ray is going to evolve into more of a pass rushing role. Shaq Barrett also is going to get more time. I think what they might do is switch Sly Williams from nose tackle to one of the defensive ends, maybe get a bigger nose tackle, and I think we'll be fine. Honestly, our offense was pretty difficult to watch, and I know Payne's great and everything, but it was a struggle last year, so I'm not saying our quarterback's going to be an upgrade, but I don't know. I think we'll be a little more dynamic offensively this year.
Cool. Well, I certainly hope not. Thanks for being on, man.
Thanks for having me.
And we're back. So, you know, I mean, it sounds like Lewis isn't nearly as concerned about his team as we are, but, you know, I think he should be a heck of a lot more concerned than he is.
I almost disagree with that. I think you have two. You have a really good Chiefs roster. You have an upcoming Raiders roster. And I don't have a lot of faith in San Diego or in Denver. I mean, Denver did come off a Super Bowl, but they're literally we're looking at a team with Mark Sanchez.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I think Kansas City and Oakland are far too strong to let Denver even sniff the playoffs this year.
I would think so and hope so now. We'll see what they do in the draft and if they actually end up getting themselves a quarterback at some point. I'm sure they'll get somebody eventually. But, I think it's wide open for Raiders or the Chiefs, though, certainly.
Now, you have to remember the Broncos' quarterback play last year was so bad, even Ryan Fitzpatrick would probably improve that offense. And the defense, still pretty ferocious, the defense. I think it'll be between the Broncos and the Chiefs. But I think San Diego is probably better than everybody thinks. They had a lot of injuries last year.
Yeah. I mean,
they had a lot of injuries. And I love the Fitzpatrick idea to Denver. And now if he signed tomorrow, I'm completely changing my tune. Fitzpatrick, for some reason, has become invisible to the NFL this year. There's a lot of really quarterback-needy teams, and there's no talks of him talking with anybody. I don't know if he's just priced himself out of contention or if he's going to end up in New York and he's just kind of playing, chicken with him. But if they go into a season next year with a Connor Cook or a Christian Hackenberg, that would be my fear. I think if they end up with Christian Hackenberg, I'm putting money that Justin Houston takes the sack record this year. And I think he'll do it in two games.
Yeah, well, that would be fun. But, to go deeper into sort of the next steps we're going to see here, obviously, the big thing left on the league calendar is the next fan of Superfan Super Mock Draft. You'll be getting that from us. And then, a minor side note is going to be the real thing, the real NFL draft. it's not supposed to be that funny.
I told you I was feeling loud and unreasonable today.
That you are, sir. And so, we decided, Chris, not only brought us Saints representation, but he brought us his big board. And so we're going to tear that thing to pieces now and think a bit about how free agency might have changed things. And we've been talking a lot about the QBs already this hour. Chris, the QBs that you have here, your listing here is Carson Wentz, then Jared Goff, then Paxton Lynch, then Connor Cook, then Jeff Driskel. I do not see the Nittany Lions quarterback on here. I honestly, though, also as a Chiefs super fan, I haven't been, tearing apart these guys' tape either, because I think we're probably not going to get a quarterback, at least on the high end here, not one of these five guys. Driskel's a guy that I'm not as familiar with. I mean, am I the only one that's surprised to see him in the top five?
I was surprised. I have Mike Mayock's rankings right in front of me in preparation for this podcast. He has Dak Prescott in that fifth spot. I'm not all that thrilled with Prescott, but I am surprised that Chris put Jeff Driskel ahead of him. I'd love to know what the reasoning was for that.
Well, the first, when I do a big board like this, it's not necessarily who I think is going to be a stud in the NFL, but I kind of look for players that, especially in the fourth and fifth spots in a lot of positions, who are just going to be in the NFL 4 to 5, 6 years from now. Hackenberg, my biggest issue with him is once that offensive line started to fall apart for him, he would zero in on the defensive lineman. And once you start watching that blitz, and if he's having that problem in college, I feel like it's going to destroy his NFL career. We've seen it a lot with David Carr down in Houston. Further down the line, Tim Couch had a really big issue with that, where the second he would take three steps back, and then he wasn't even able to go through his progression. And that's my fear of Hackenberg. Now, Dak Prescott, it seems to be the next logical answer. But he struggles with his accuracy so much. He's a mobile quarterback who I don't think has the speed that'll translate to the NFL. I don't think he's as dynamic as we want him to be. So then for me, it went to Driskel. Driskel really struggled in Florida, but then was able to go to Louisiana Tech and really kind of found his confidence and found his stride. I don't think he's the next greatest quarterback, but I could foresee him. He reminds me a lot of like a Jake Plummer when he was coming out of college. is somebody who's just mobile enough, just accurate enough, and a strong enough arm to where a couple years down the road, he can be your starter. So that's why I went with a five on him.
And do you think, is this the year that the Saints try to get their QB of the future and maybe go after somebody high, or do you guys just have too many holes to have that as a luxury?
Well, we drafted Derek Grayson out of the third round last year, and it's too early, I think, to give up on him. So Sean Payton loves to draft players and redshirt them. We went through that last year with Grayson. It looks like we'll do it again. We did it with Chase Daniel for probably 3 years, I think. So I could see I think we're good there. Plus, I mean, we have to find a defense at some point. So a third-string quarterback is a bit of a luxury for us.
Garrett Grayson is much better than Chase Daniel. He's a potential starter. I thought that was a great pick. I was kind of hoping the Bears would take him. There is one guy I want to ask you about, and I hope I'm not putting you on the spot. But I was watching the Senior Bowl, and Brandon Allen caught my eye. He's listed at 6'1", which is a little short, but he sure didn't play that way. I really like the guy. Do you have any thoughts on him? I hope I'm not putting you on the spot by bringing that up.
6'1", the big concern that came up with him is I believe he had the smallest hands at the combine out of the quarterbacks. And when, you know, the things Russell Wilson and Drew Brees obviously aren't the tallest quarterbacks in the league, but the one thing they have is they have huge hands. So they're able to get away with a lot of the other shortcomings, no pun intended. But with Allen, the fear is taking a snap. And once things start to, you know, the pocket starts to muck up on him, is he going to be able to hold out of that ball when the Shane Raids of the world are blowing past him? So there's a lot to like about him, but unfortunately, if I headed to the top 10, he'd probably be 7, 8. I don't see a huge upside for him. If I had to add anybody else, it would be Dak Prescott and Kyle Murphy from Stanford.
They measured his hands at the Senior Bowl. I think he was only 8.5 inches, and I know most scouts want 9 or above. So they hired a masseuse, and a masseuse worked on his hands before the combine, and I think he went up something like 8 7/8 or something like that. They managed to actually add some size onto his hands by hiring a masseuse, which I thought was pretty clever.
That's pretty odd.
That tells you how much of a concern it is.
talking about somebody with larger hands, I think Jared Goff also measured his hands a little bit more than what they were at the combine. I was just wondering why you have Wentz 1 and Goff 2. It's an interesting. Are you based that on the upside of Wentz as opposed to Goff's more polished and coming off 37 career starts?
Well, you know, and bear with me here. I don't remember exactly what games it was, but with Wentz, you don't have a lot of games, but you have consistent games out of him. With Goff, there were some really bad games. And I'm trying to remember, there's one in particular that he got destroyed. And I think maybe that resonates with me a little bit. But Wentz, to me, I think Wentz is actually pretty underrated. Wentz reminds me a lot of Aaron Rodgers coming out of college. Now, the Aaron Rodgers coming out of college and the Aaron Rodgers we have now are two different players. But he's a lot more mobile than I think he's given credit for. He already kind of has an NFL frame. Goff and Paxton Lynch, they're very thin. They're going to have to grow and mature a little bit as far as his body goes. I don't think Wentz really does. I think he's able to go in, his body's NFL ready. Give him a year. I think he very much needs that Carson Palmer treatment where he sits behind a John Kitna for a year. But if you're able to give that to him, like in Dallas, if I was Dallas, I'd be looking to trade up for him. Give him a year or two under Tony Romo, and I think they're set for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
The Jared Goff game was the one against Utah.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, that's right.
Through 5 interceptions, it was a really bad game. Sorry, I just wanted to make sure I got that in.
If you're a team that already has some kind of a quarterback, but you're still picking high in the draft, at running back, it seems like there's some very interesting top guys. I mean, obviously Ezekiel Elliott, he's he's going to be the highest drafted running back probably in a while. And under him on this list, at starting at two, you have Jonathan Williams, followed by Kenneth Dixon, Derrick Henry, and Devontae Booker. I know the Chiefs aren't in the market for any of these guys, but Tom and Neil, both of your teams lost, you know, well, not, I mean, I guess in the case of Neil, you haven't lost Alfred Morris yet, but you know, Tom, so starting with you, you've lost your iconic kind of every down back now. I mean, do you think the Bears would consider one of these guys this high? And what do you think of the rankings?
Yeah, the Bears are in this really weird situation. They let Matt Forte go in the offseason. Of course, he's a wonderful running back. We all loved him here. And he's 30 years old. And the thought was that, you know, that's a lull for a lot of running backs. And to tell you the truth, there might have been some feeling in the organization and certainly amongst the fans that maybe it was time for him to join a winner. And, you know, I think that there was a genuine feeling that the guy had earned that, and he'd earned the right to move on. He did express a desire to come back, but my thought was, well, I think he's better off leaving. And the Bears had me convinced that they love Jeremy Langford, who's a fifth rounder last year, and that they like Kadeem Carey, who was the third running back last year, but who saw significant time on the field and looked pretty good. He runs very hard. He's got his limitations, but he got on the field as a special teamer, and that allowed them to get him in, get him the ball a little bit. And I thought he was fine, and they had me convinced that they were satisfied with that pair. And I thought they were set at running back. And then the next thing you know, the news comes down that they made C.J. Anderson an offer that was actually a bigger offer than the one that Miami eventually signed sent him to an offer sheet to. So now we don't really know what's going on here. I don't know if Anderson was just a big exception to the rule or what. He's certainly a lot younger than Forte at 26, and he would have fit in with what they're trying to do here, but it doesn't, you know, now we're not convinced entirely that they're as satisfied as they say they are with Langford. I can't imagine they would take Ezekiel Elliott just because they have so many needs on defense. And the need at running back, you know, let's put it this way. They might, you know, they may not be entirely satisfied with Langford, but I saw enough where I was willing to take their word for it in January. So the need isn't that great. And the other thing, the other reason why I don't think they're going to take Elliott is, frankly, I think he's going to be gone. I think I have a sneaking suspicion that Philadelphia traded up from 13 to 8, I think it was, with the Dolphins right before free agency started. I'm about 90% sure they traded up because they want Ezekiel Elliott, and I think he'll be gone at 8. So I doubt we'll ever see him, and I doubt they'll even have the chance. But my guess is they're going to draft defense. I don't think they're going to draft a running back in the first round.
What about you, Neil? Any possibility of a first-round running back for Washington?
Well, first-round running back, absolutely no chance whatsoever, which probably guarantees they'll be taking one. But no, I can't see them. I think we're happy with Matt Jones, we're happy in the fact that Jones will probably start the season as the starter. He came in last year as a rookie, did really well, caught passes out of the backfield and runs hard. Probably suits the more power running game we have now in Washington, as opposed to the more zone blocking that Morris excelled in. And yeah, really, really, Morris had two Pro Bowl seasons with us. Really loved the guy, and wish him. I hope he picks up with a team there. I have to say, I'm definitely in the camp of not drafting a running back high, unless he is a truly special player. I think we saw one last year with Todd Gurley. Injury aside, he is a special player. I just don't see it from Elliott. I think he's good. I think he does most facets of the game pretty well. I don't see the number 8 or top 10 pick in the draft. I just don't see it.
You know, the thing with Elliott is, you know, Todd Gurley is a wonderful runner, and I loved him in college. And I don't think Elliott's as good as a runner, but the thing is, he does everything else so well He's a really smooth athlete that not only runs well, he catches well and he blocks well. And I think that while Gurley's a top running back, I have a feeling that Elliott's going to turn out to be a weapon. And I think that's why teams might really like him. Like I said, I think Philadelphia might really like him. Rumor has it that Ryan Matthews is on the trading block. I don't see any way that they would do that unless they planned on drafting somebody fairly high.
Sure. Do you think 600 touches over the last two seasons is something to worry about?
Well, I don't think he's got an injury history, does he? I'm not real sure about that, but I don't remember reading anything about it. So apparently he takes the hits pretty well. I think it's always kind of a concern, but I think that these running backs, they're not, you can't just fit them all into sort of a cookie cutter, sort of like, okay, you took this many hits and that's it. And I think some guys can take it better than others, and he seems to be one of the guys. As far as I can tell, he hadn't been affected by it.
I like your number two running back. I like Jonathan Williams. I think that's great. You've got him in your top five. Missed all of 2015, but yeah, like him a lot. We've got a jersey waiting for him in maybe the third round if he falls that far.
You know, I think Jersey would be a great spot for him. I think the Jets would be almost an ideal fit with losing Chris Ivory. And, they brought back Powell, if I remember correctly. So they still need that number one kind of thumper behind Forte. Forte, unfortunately, he's starting to get injured, dinged up a little bit per season. So give him a year or two under Forte, I think Williams could be great.
I think a lot of people are going to notice on this list that Derrick Henry is number four on your list. He seems to be ranked I think he's ranked number two on most media experts' lists. I just wondered why you had dropped him, what you saw as his flaws.
Well, the main issue I have with Derrick Henry is his vision. He's very and I feel this way with most Alabama running backs when they come out. It's almost like they coach them to run with their eyes closed for the first 15 yards. If I had a nickel for every time Mark Ingram ran into an offensive lineman at the back, I'd be a wealthy man. Henry cannot change direction. He runs, and then it's almost like he has to kind of stop, turn, and run again. He's very lumbering. It reminds me a lot of, if you remember, Najee Davenport for the, he was with the Packers for a while and the Steelers. He was big, he was fast, and he ran straight. So Henry could be good, but there's very few teams that I think could utilize him. New England, for example, they've found a way to utilize LeGarrette Blount when he's failed everywhere else, with the exception, I think, of a season in Tampa. But that's just New England. I don't see a lot of teams that are going to be able to use him and use him successfully. And if I could touch real quick on what Tom said about Chicago drafting quarterback or running back. Going after C.J. Anderson is a very Ryan Pace move. That's something that I watched that happen in New Orleans year in and year out. And when we drafted Mark Ingram, that came out of nowhere. You know, we had Reggie Bush, we had Pierre Thomas, we thought we were set. So don't be shocked. It very well could happen to you in Chicago. If Elliott falls far enough, they will, because he loves, it's the old Saints mentality, they love the three running backs. And they want three running backs to do one thing really well. So Elliott might be a bear. It might happen to you.
I'd be perfectly happy with that, and I appreciate the insight. You know, we're still trying to figure him out here. It's only his second draft, and he didn't have a lot of time before the first one. So I appreciate that. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll see if that turns out to be right. I like Elliott. I'd be perfectly happy with him being drafted.
Well, and so moving on to the wide receivers, this is a really weird year for wide receivers. You had almost none of them break 4.4 at the combine. And granted, it's, you know, Al Davis isn't, you know, drafting anymore, but that's still important. but nonetheless, I mean, it does seem like we're going to see at least one go in the top 15, but it might not be until right around 15. In terms of your rankings, you have Laquon Treadwell first, followed by Josh Doctson, then Corey Coleman, then Michael Thomas and Sterling Shepard. I've been seeing a lot more and more people, you know, pushing Josh Doctson up their lists. he's kind of the guy who stands out to me because it seems like a lot of the buzz, at least, was about Corey Coleman going in.
Well, and it was, but then you didn't get to see Corey Coleman run at the combine. And that, for better or for worse, you know, that really affected his draft, or at least in the rankings, because these are all based off what you see today, especially with the, you know, your commentators, your NFL networks, your ESPNs. You know, as you mentioned earlier about, like, picking a super fan, for example, these guys only have a very short period to kind of go through and make these lists. So a lot of it is, what have you done for me lately? They've not seen Corey Coleman, so he's going to fall. My issue with Corey Coleman is you've not seen him run a lot of routes. Every year you see players come out like this. I think I was at Dorsett last year. And I think they're pretty similar skill set, though I think I like Coleman coming out more. It's so hard to take, you know, really grasp these guys who their game is fast. You know, you can look at Treadwell and kind of picture him on your team. You can get that idea of how you want to work him in the Marcus Colson kind of role. For the record, Marcus Colson, I would love to have Treadwell. I think he's a clone. Docton is moving up quickly and rightfully so. He's probably has the best hands in the nation coming in and out of this year. His routes are good. He's got good size and he's got good speed, but not great either way. But you look at him and like Michael Crabtree, I think there's a very similar game there. So, and then, you know, just try to go through this real quick. So then we're running short on time. Michael Thomas is intriguing, but I think the guy who really steals the show here is Sterling Shepard. And I think 2-3 years from now, we're going to be wondering why he waited till the third round.
Interesting. So you think he's going to fall that far?
I think he could. He's another one of those guys that he does a lot of things really well. He does nothing great. And especially early on with receivers, they want you really tall or they want you really fast. So, you know, Will Fuller, who's not on my list, he's going to go before him. I think these four guys do as well. And there's just normally not a lot of receivers who go in the first two rounds anymore.
I just don't like the wide receiver class at all. I have a feeling that because we've had, two or three really fabulous wide receiver classes, that the media almost feel obliged to insist upon us having an outstanding receiver class and push these guys up boards and all this just because they can't do without it. I don't see anything special here in the wide receiver class.
I agree with you. And I think Treadwell is somebody who I think could end up falling day two and really surprise a lot of people. Now, you stated that someone has to go in the top 15. I don't believe that. I think Doxon might end up in the mid-20s, and that's the first receiver we see off the board.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with the Chiefs. The Chiefs, I mean, it seems like everything's lining up to them taking a cornerback in the draft. It's one of the few really fairly open holes we have in our starting lineup on either side of the ball. But, you know, I could definitely see Andy Reid jumping at, you know, a wide receiver in sort of a weird class that would fall into the bottom of the first. But there's just not many of these guys that even I would be that excited about, particularly with his, you know, with his scheme, which requires, I mean, basically what the Chiefs really need is a guy who has some speed. So unless it's Treadwell, I mean, I'm not sure there's anybody here that I would be jumping up and down for us, you know, sort of foregoing our cornerback need to snag a wide receiver.
I think as a Kansas City fan, the two names that I would pay attention to would be Coleman or Thomas. They seem to fit what Andy Reid likes in a wide receiver. But I think Andy Reid's also incredibly smart, and he knows he can get one of them in the second round.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Well, looking at the offensive line.
Nick, before you move on to wide receivers, I know we're looking at time here, but it is worth just out of nothing else, just out of the history of the NFL draft, to say that a Raiders superfan is desperate to take Jakeem Grant in the sixth round, who runs a 4.1240. So typical great Raiders pick, and yeah, fingers crossed.
I hope he takes him in the first.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fantastic?
Well, moving on to the slow guys on the tackle side, I think there's absolutely no controversy with your top overall offensive tackle at Laremy Tunsil. And followed by Jack Conklin, Ronnie Staley, Taylor Decker, and Jermaine Ifedi. You know, Conklin's also an interesting guy in terms of figuring out where he's going to fit, where he's going to slot in. I've seen him falling in mocks really far. I've seen him being taken pretty high. What are you seeing out of Conklin, Chris?
To me, Conklin is kind of the, and I think I said this before, he's the jack of all trades. He's a master of none. I think he's going to pan out better at right tackle than left. So there's,
yes,
that's going to affect his draft status a lot. Now, there are teams that really put an emphasis on that right tackle. They treat it just as important as the left. Those are teams, for example, that have to face Tamba Hali and Justin Houston twice a season. And now Irvin and Mack. So Conklin has a place in the first round. And it's more of a tribute to, I just, Stanley Decker and, I'm going to butcher his name, but Effetti, they all seem to have that one big question about him, where Conklin just, he kind of doesn't, you know, he's pretty solid. And Tunsil's just, you know, he could flame out in the next 3 years, or he's the next Walter Jones. He could be that good.
So moving on to tight end, you have here, I mean, it's not a great tight end class. I don't know. I don't think any of these guys are going to be drafted in the first round, maybe not second round. You know, maybe we see the first one off the board in the third. But anyways, your top guy is Hunter Henry. At number two, you have Nick Vinette. At number three, Jarrell Adams. Four, Tyler Higbee. And five, Bryce Williams. Yeah, interesting. Neil, what are your thoughts on this?
I guess looking at the list, I was surprised that Austin Hooper's not on the list. And I'm even more surprised now that you think the first one won't come off until the third round. I think Hunter Henry will is likely to go first round. No, Chris?
Well, I want to meet you guys in the middle, actually. I think Hunter Henry is a pretty solid second-round pick. As far as Hooper goes, this is one of those situations where you got to make the break somewhere. He's a pretty solid number six for me. I just really, really like the upside of Bryce Williams and Tyler Higbee. I tell you, teams that are really excited about this class, and there's not a lot of them, but somebody like Green Bay. You know, Jarrell Adams, to me, just screams to Michael Finley. They have so many. He may not be as athletic, but he could fit that offense so well. And also, you know, Bryce Williams, somebody that could very easily fall into the fourth round if things get a little crazy, and a tight end hungry team could still get a pretty solid number two with him. So there's some talent here, but it's not like, you know, past years where you had a Max Williams or that definite number one tight end.
So who's the most surly one out of this group? Because Chicago Tom really needs an unhappy tight end. There's a hole there on his team.
Yeah, we're so used to it. Tell me Nick Vanette's kind of a jerk, because I think that's the guy I'd like to see him take.
Nick Vanette is a, you know, he could be really good. The problem is that Ohio State hates tight ends. Much like Jeff Howerman, I think it was last year, you're hearing the same thing about Nick Vanette now, which is Urban Meyer loved him, wishes he used him more. But that's all you have to go off of. He didn't have the greatest showing at the Senior Bowl, had a pretty average combine. I could see him, and actually, if I were to redo this, I think I would drop him at least underneath Adams. He seems to be falling pretty consistently, but he should be there second, third round. And, you know, I think you have a tight end in Zach Miller who looks a lot like him, you know, plays a lot like him. He's just significantly younger.
Yeah, I hope he blocks a little bit better than him. Miller's a wonderful player. He's 31, and they could use another one like him, but I was kind of hoping Vanette would be a better blocker than that, maybe a little bit more of an all-around tight end. Maybe that's a vain hope.
He could be, but unfortunately, you've not seen a lot of Nick Vanette in college to make an assessment one way or the other.
No. So moving to the interior, you've separated it out between guards and centers, which I know, I mean, a lot of folks, you know, will together. But in terms of the top prospects at both, I mean, I think they're guys that could play each other's positions, essentially. I mean, and I think they're the two most likely to end up in the first round as well. Just running through your full guards list here, it is headlined by Cody Whitehair, followed by Joshua Garnett, Christian Westerman, Connor McGovern, and Vidal. Is it Vidal or Vadel Alexander? I'm going to say Vidal. And at center, it's Ryan Kelly is a top overall guy. And I've heard some talk anyway, and that's what I want you to comment on, that he would also be the top guard. And he's followed by Nick Martin, Graham Glasgow, Max Schwartz. I think, I mean, who actually is the other interior there, Ryan Kelly or Cody Whitehair?
Oh, Ryan Kelly. Absolutely Ryan Kelly. I think he's the top guard. He's the top center. And then what Whitehair scares me because of his strength, and I think he has to play in his own offense. If you're, you know, a power offense, the power line, you want a road grader. I think Garrett actually ranks higher than he does.
I really, really like Ryan Kelly. I would not be surprised to see him go in the top, well, somewhere between picks 12 and 20. And if he's there at 21 for Washington, oh, that's a tough call. He's good. I like him. He's nasty. I like that. I do like Graham Glasgow as well. He can come play for Washington. Good Scottish name.
Yeah, you just like the name, man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I like the name, Graham Glasgow. He could be rubbish.
Glasgow, I think Glasgow could actually be the highest rated one if he wasn't, if there wasn't so many character concerns. I think that's just a big knock on him. As far as talent-wise, and if he decides to grow up, and as a Michigan fan, I love and hate him. But if he can figure it out, someone's going to get a steal with him.
So off-field problems and character questions, then he's living up to his name then.
A little rough around the edges, a little industrial, drinks a bit too much. Let's go.
I was just going to say, you know, it's worth noting how many teams need interior offensive line help. I don't remember ever seeing a year in the NFL where the offensive lines were so poor across the league. And if you had a good one like the Cowboys do, then you were pretty lucky. You know, I know that most people don't think that you draft center in the top 20, but, well, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be too surprised if all these guys didn't get shoved up, son. And I'm kind of wondering when I look at your tackle list if any of those guys are going to convert to guard. I'm thinking about Fetty in particular. There's, you know, some thought that he could move inside pretty easily because there are a lot of teams that need help in there. Any thoughts on that?
Well, with Fetty, the concern that I've read that as well. I'm trying to find a nice way of putting this. He plays soft. He's a finesse player that I wouldn't want him lining up at left guard for me. He could be a great athletic left tackle, but I think that's it. If you have any idea of putting him one-on-one with a nose tackle or defensive tackle, I think he just gets eaten alive. I do want to say something quick about Tunsil. There was a lot of stories came out of the NFL Combine about the defensive tackle, Kandice. And Kandice had come out in an interview stating that it wasn't his marijuana that forced him to jump out of the window of his Tunsil's, that they just happened to be in Tunsil's room. As soon as those stories came out, that's when you started hearing stories about Tennessee looking to trading out of that top spot. I'm curious if you guys have any thoughts on, is this a potential character issue that we have with Tunsil? And if so, how far does he fall?
I mean, if he tested positive for marijuana, then I think he's going to fall. If he didn't, then it all depends on what he told the teams in the meetings. And, you know, not being privy to that, it's a little hard to make a judgment. I have a hard time letting the idea of a player smoking marijuana on his own time as being an issue anymore. I think if you test positive or if there's anything about it that's going to keep you off the field, then it's a red flag. But if that doesn't happen, then I don't think it would affect me very much. I don't know how NFL teams feel about it, but that's assuming that he didn't test positive in the combine, which we really don't know. Those things have a habit of coming out late. And it assumes that he said all the right things in the meetings with teams. And, you know, we just don't know that.
You brought up the idea of the Titans trade. I mean, I just want to bring that up just because that was something else that there was a report on this week of the I think it was the Titans GM saying that they're going to expect a, quote, king's ransom in order to move down and trade down in the draft. But I don't believe that for a second either. I mean, like, what else are you going to say at this stage, a month away from the draft, that, oh, yeah, we'd pretty much take anything to move down? I think they're trying to play it well now. But I mean, I'd almost be surprised if they don't move, you know, one of these QB hungry teams wanting to hopscotch to get their preferred guy, because the QBs are just very different. I mean, it's not like you have Andrew Luck and RG3, which at the time it seemed like 1A, 1B, who cares which one you get. Obviously it matters now, you can tell. But, you know, I would be really surprised if the Titans end up picking at one.
And I agree. And something else that, you know, them taking Tunsil, and I feel like this is something that's very important and not being missed. If they take Tunsil, you have to then be okay with taking somebody who's going to play right tackle because you have Tyler Lewan, or you have to know Tyler Lewan's going to be able to make that switch. Moving from left tackle to right tackle isn't always a guarantee. And they're very invested in Tyler Lewan. He was a first-round pick, what, 2 years ago, I believe. And with that, also, you have the salary ramifications of having two high first-round picks as your bookend tackles, which, again, some teams are okay with that. Some teams aren't, though they're happy with the average bargain bin guys. So I think Tennessee's getting to the point to where they're almost getting a little desperate to move out of that spot, or else they're going to lose value. Because they're going to end up with a Bosa or a Ramsey, and then always kind of wonder if they could have moved down 2, 3, 4 spots and gotten the same player.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. This has been a jam-packed and really fun edition of the Next Fan Up podcast, where we got to go through all the offense. We talked about some of the news, and we have gotten a chance to hear from a couple of the new voices that we'll hopefully be hearing a lot of. You're definitely going to be hearing Chris next week as we go through the defensive players in his big board. And also, definitely look for us this week. It's going to be a great Thursday pod with the great Pod Vader. He also has, as a guest, Eric Galko of OptimumScouting.com, and he's going to be asking a bunch more questions about the draft and Eric Galko's, what he's been seeing in terms of scouting the players there. And we want your questions, too, because as you see, we frequently go long here, and we'd love to have some audience questions for Eric. You can send those in to us at nextfanup@gmail.com. Also, your superfan applications if you are you're a fan of the Bills, Cardinals, and Lions. You can also reach us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. You can find us on Facebook as well. And you can post in there if you just search for us, NextFanUp, in the Facebook search bar. You can find me for talking all sorts of jive if you'd like, or complaining about my excessive chatter on the Chiefs. That's not a valid argument, by the way. But I am at Clayton Nicholas on Twitter. Where can they find you, Tom, if they felt that you were not unreasonable enough on this particular pod?
I am at Bearing the News, all one word, on Twitter. And I do write for a couple websites. One is bearingthenews.com. And the other one is finmaniacs.com. It's a Dolphins website. So if you ever need me to switch teams, I can probably do that. I can be found there as well.
And Neil, if people just want to hear more of your sexy accent, but in text form, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at NeilSalmon71. That's salmon as in the fish.
And Chris.
I'm fairly cheap.
You're fairly cute.
I'm fairly cheap.
Are you fairly cheap? Oh, well, you got to be one or the other, I suppose. Anyways. So, Chris, if people would like to send their hearty welcome and trolling craziness to you, what would be the best way of getting that conversation going?
Well, I am on Twitter at Dat Patron Patron Saint. That's D-A-T Patron Saint. And no, feel free, hit me up. I know for one, I hate people who do lists, and I always disagree with them. So I'm kind of eagerly awaiting the punishment I'm going to get for having Jeff Driscoll in my top five.
So you hate yourself is basically what you're saying.
You know, when I volunteered to do this, I got halfway through it and realized what I had just done. And then I went through every list that I've complained on myself, and I looked at my wife and just went, you know, first show, and I did this. This was a, I've made a terrible mistake. So
congratulations,
it was a lot
first
of fun.
Show.
I greatly appreciate bringing me on.
Yeah, first show, you're already the worst person in the world. It's good.
Well, before we sign off, I do want to apologize to somebody. On Thursday's show, Pod Vader had mentioned the reason I got this is because of a tweet that I had sent him after I sent my application saying I had this in the bag. I actually didn't send that tweet. So I do apologize for whoever's spot I stole. but there's already one person, I'm sure, that's waiting to light me up for that one.
Oh, yeah.
No, I never sent that, and gave me a good laugh as I was driving to work, and I heard that.
Are you claiming your Twitter account was hacked? That's very celebrity.
No,
is that why we've been getting all these like weird pictures of your crotch as well?
No, you know, that was just actually Neil's accent.
whoever that was that sent that tweet, just send Pod another one and tell him you're a Lions fan.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, we're starting to have a little bit too much fun here. So I think it's time to bring it to a close. This has been Next Fan Up. And look for us on Thursday. And there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.
Look, we all know that guys with small hands can make this country great. That's all I want to say.